For over 12,000 years, cannabis has been cultivated for textiles, fiber, food, and yes, for fun. Looking back to all its uses and forward to all its potential, we ask, can we build homes with cannabis?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1160th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Civitavecchia who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Folks, an email from a landscape designer and former Food Chain guest, Catherine Mathewson, recently remarking at the fact that California is burning up and that the state better wise up. And the way to start wising up is with homes made of hemp. Well, why not, I thought. Just about everything has been made of hemp somewhere along the line. Consider Henry Ford's first Model T was built with hemp and built to run on hemp gasoline. Ford's T, which was known as the car that from soil, that grew from soil, even had hemp plastic panels whose impact strength was said to be 10 times stronger than steel. And Catherine was not just talking about wising up. She is wising up by having her home in San Jose, California, insulated with hemp fiber insulation from Kentucky. It's fire resistant, she said, and it breathed. So today we're going to explore the possibility of building a home with one of the America's first crops, and that would be hemp from cannabis sativa. Here to help us do the exploring, we have Catherine Mathewson, who is owner of the Secret Gardens, a landscape design company in Northern California. Catherine, welcome to the welcome back to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael.
So what were we talking about 15 years ago when you last appeared on the Food Chain radio program?
One of the things that I'm also, I am a biologist and ecologist. I have, that's my first degree. And so I and my family was farmers. And so we talked about the BAREC, the Save BAREC, the Bay Area Research Extension Center.
Did we do it? Did we save it?
Unfortunately, most of it was put into housing. And the UC, the state gave a UC Regent, Summerhill Homes, owned by Summerhill Homes, the land, and they spent a lot of money against us. And we still have 6 acres, though, to turn into some kind of urban farm.
Well, good for you. Well, Catherine, you tuned in to me with the notion, with the fact that you're going to insulate your home with hemp from Kentucky, from the Sun Strands Company in Kentucky. Why on earth did you decide to insulate your home with hemp instead of all the rest of the stuff that we insulate homes with?
Well, I had some, it started out with a mold problem, and I had to take the ceiling out and some leaks, roof leaks. So I had to take the ceiling out, and I had a mold person who suggested that I talk to a hemp technology a hemp company in Chicago, and so I called them to get hemp. And part of the reason that it's a flat roof area, and so it needs to breathe, and there's not a lot of room for. And I saw that the other that was the problem, is there was no breathing, air breathing in these flat areas in the roof. So that's what attracted me to it at the beginning. And then as I did research on it, and as the fires came, I decided that, you know, it's really important for the entire state. A couple of years ago, I had tried...
So, Catherine, you found some insulation, not in Chicago, but you found it in Kentucky. What was it?
Chicago suggested that I talk to Sunstrands.
Mm-hmm. And here we are at Sunstrands.
I might add, a couple of years ago, I tried to get my roof made out of hemp and from Canada, and they wouldn't ship it over the border.
Ah.
So now it's possible to get it over to the border to California because the laws are at least slightly changing.
Well, good. Let's go to Kentucky right now and talk with the folks of Sunstrands. First of all, we have Dr. Trey Riddle, who is the founder, I think, and CEO of Sunstrands, and Adam Block with us. Trey, let's start with you. How did you come up with the name Sunstrands? I like that.
It's a little-known fact that the name is Sunstrand, and the website is Sunstrands Plural. But it's a detail. I'm a detail guy. I don't know. It was just a brainstorming session. We were heavily involved in biomaterials, not just hemp, but other natural fibers as well, and needed to come up with a name that sort of resonated with the, you know, with the product and what we were doing. And natural fibers, sun strands, seemed to work.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you, Dr. Trey, when did you, like, just wake up to the fact that cannabis fiber was really something special? Was there a time when that apple fell on your head and it just turned you on to the fact that there's something to work with here?
You know, I would say that it was more of an evolution than an epiphany. So I had been interested, my background is in polymer composites, so that's glass fiber, carbon fiber structures, and was looking for a natural fiber to replace glass fiber. And it originally started with bamboo fiber. And through our work with bamboo and our work with customers and manufacturers, we sort of evolved to bring on more feedstocks, one of them being hemp. And it's really been, you know, hemp is a very versatile plant as a fiber crop and otherwise. And it was really more of a slow evolution to embrace hemp as a big opportunity in a wide spectrum of industries. And so we still do other feedstocks as well, but hemp is becoming the most popular product in our portfolio.
Adam, your job is marketing. How in the heck do you go about marketing hemp insulation?
That's a good question. So, believe it or not, there's actually a desire by many folks to build with more sustainable materials. The glass fiber that is traditionally used to install is itchy, and a lot of folks don't like the way that it feels when they breathe it.
Ew, yuck.
All these types of things. So believe it or not, there is the desire already in the marketplace. However, education is required, of course, along with a variety of distribution and sales needs that any traditional business would have.
Well, good. Let me start with a basic question, because I'm sure a lot of people are kind of confused. What on earth is hemp? Doctor?
Yeah. Hemp is technically cannabis sativa. It is actually the same genus and species as marijuana. However, hemp is defined to have a threshold of no more than 0.3% THC. So the different varietals or cultivars, which are still the same genus and species, have been bred over time, either intentionally or unintentionally, where some have favored higher production of THC and others higher yields of the fiber. And so hemp has been sort of artificially by the government defined as less than 0.3% THC, but physically it's not that meaningful from a genetics perspective.
Good. Now, quick question that comes to mind, is this the same cannabis that's being used for the CBD medicinal purposes?
It is.
A low THC and high CBD ratio?
Yeah, so right now the CBD on the market comes both from marijuana producers in states like Colorado and then also hemp producers all over the world. The CBD is generally lower in hemp crops than in marijuana crops, but it's still high enough that it makes good business sense.
Gotcha. And how are we doing this when it's illegal?
Well, That's actually thanks to the 2014 Farm Bill. So essentially there was an amendment in the Farm Bill when it was passed in 2014 to allow the cultivation, processing, and marketing of hemp as long as it was within the constraints of a state-sponsored program. So the federal government said, we're going to let you grow and process hemp. At the state level, states have to manage it through either their Department of Agriculture or their institutions of higher learning. And so then the states had to go and pass reciprocal legislation that allowed hemp to be grown in the states and the program to be managed by the Department of Ag or the universities. So it is legal to grow hemp in most states, but
not in others.
Require a lot of paperwork and hoops to jump through.
There you go. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about building homes of hemp. Can we do it? Yes, we can. Right back.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org, the food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org, farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro Farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro Farm it. You can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro Farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro Farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro Farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro Farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
I got to thinking about how Henry Ford built a car out of hemp. And he did it way back when. And he built a car that was built to run on hemp gasoline and have glass or have plastic windscreens and that were said to be 10 times stronger than steel. So in talking about building a home or the possibilities of building a home, I just wonder how on earth he went about doing this. Dr. Riddle, how does one build a car out of hemp?
Well, I have to say, I'm not sure, you know, what Henry Ford did. The data is not as prevalent as you might hope. But today you can certainly build components of vehicles with hemp. And there's a few different scenarios. You can take the hemp fiber and you can co-mingle it with a petroleum fiber like a polypropylene to create what's called a non-woven mat, which we would generally think of as a felt. That felt, which might be 50% hemp fiber and 50% polypropylene or thermoplastic fiber, can actually be molded under heat and pressure to create a rigid door panel, and that is actually fairly common. Another opportunity to use hemp in vehicles is as a filler in plastic injection molding parts, so things like the glove box or armrest or dashboards. They'll take the inner woody core of the hemp plant, which will be called the herd or the shive, That'll be ground up and mixed in with the thermal plastic, again, like a polypropylene, and then molded into the part for the car. And then the third place where hemp can be used in a vehicle is in things like the trunk liners and the headliners, you know, those carpety surfaces on the floor where you can use hemp fiber to also make those products as well.
So when you say hemp is a very versatile plant, you're not kidding, are you?
Well, you know, I tend to think of the, you know, what's interesting about hemp is it's very versatile because of the three pillars, the grain for dietary reasons, the CBD for health reasons, and the fiber for industrial reasons. There are other fiber crops that can do many of the same things hemp can do, like the examples that we just discussed for the automobile, but there is no other plant that can do all three of those primary processes.
So when America passed its first laws, one of the first laws was required all farmers to grow hemp because it was such a valuable commodity, could do so many things, right?
Yeah.
So I have a question for you that kind of popped up when I was thinking about this show. In 1937, the United States made cannabis illegal. And I got to wondering, do you think it was made illegal? What, your opinion? Do you think it was made illegal because of the fear of its intoxicating properties or because of the competition it offered existing industries?
You know, that's a tough question. There is a lot of different opinions out there. There's a lot of people that believe that it was an effort to squash hemp fiber because it would compete with the synthetic fibers, which were relatively new at the time. And then also, you know, the other camp is on the abolition of marijuana. I kind of tend to think it was a package deal. I think there was probably pressure on the government to stymie marijuana usage because of its narcotic effects. And then I think at the same time, there probably was some pushback from companies that had come out with new technology around synthetic fibers. So I tend to think it was likely more of a combination of the timing and the whim of the people and the manufacturer at the time, and not any one thing that pushed it to be illegal.
Okay. So now you're working with legal hemp farmers in Kentucky, right?
That's right.
And kind of harkens back to the days of World War II and just after World War II when it was an industrial crop that was grown pretty much everywhere. Now, with respect to Canada, I know it's legal up there to grow and process hemp. And I know there's a border between the two countries. So what's going to happen there?
Well, it's actually been legal to grow and process hemp in Canada for almost 20 years. What has changed recently is Canada has recently passed recreational marijuana law. So, but from a hemp perspective, you know, what will end up happening is less imports from Canada of things like hemp protein and hemp hearts. You know, food is a big part of what's coming in from Canada. That's really what they're producing is grain and oil. In Canada, shipping a lot of it to the U.S. So I would expect those sales to go down as U.S. producers begin to ramp up.
Okay. And do you see many other states adopting hemp, as has Kentucky? I know it's. I know California's kind of grappling with it, but they haven't come up with anything yet.
I'm not up to speed on the exact number, but I believe about half of the states in the union have legal hemp legislation right now that can embrace the 2014 Farm Bill. But, you know, all those laws are written differently, and so Kentucky, you know, is very proactive and on the cutting edge and has legislation and a support network in our governance to facilitate a hemp industry, whereas, you know, a state like Indiana, who's had hemp legislation for a couple of years, hasn't been able to get an industry off the ground because the way those laws were written were not very conducive to commercialization.
There you go. So you need a good local authority to work this out.
Does
Go ahead, Catherine.
There's an article titled Industrial Hemp and Kentucky Shall Lead Us.
There you go. I guess it is. Now, as we have you up, Catherine, why on earth, again, you were looking at hemp for a number of reasons. One of them was for insulation of your house, and I guess they're going to be insulating your house next week, right, with this industrial hemp that's been turned into insulation.
Yes, it's arriving this week and going to be installed next week.
Well, Adam, your job is to sell this stuff, so sell us on it. What is it about this hemp insulation that is different than regular insulation?
Well, for one, it's rapidly renewable, right? I mean, we grow it in the ground, and it goes from seed to finished product in 120 days. So it is a fully natural, low dust, low odor, rapidly renewable product.
What is the conventional insulation made out of, besides those really nasty fibers?
Stuff, right, the fiberglass that when you pull apart makes you all itchy, right? You don't want to lay your baby on pink fiberglass, but you can be having a very comfortable baby on our natural fiber insulation.
Well, there you go. I guess that's a good selling point. What about the other properties of it? Catherine said it's resistant to mold. Well, that's a big deal, especially if it's an organic material.
Right. No doubt about it, right? We have to treat our material so that it's not only up to standard and up to building codes when it comes to things like mold, but also things like fire, right? We have to be fire resistant.
And that's one of the things that Catherine brought up when she contacted me. Michael, California is burning up, and it is burning up these days. And part of the reason is that we're building houses that burn up really quickly and fuel the flames of this fire. So somehow we have to come to grips with this. And she pointed to fire-resistant hemp materials, and I got to thinking, is this possible? And I started looking around, and that's one of the things that you see when people are talking about hemp. It says fire proof. How is it possible for something that grows up as a weed to be fireproof? That's one of the questions we want to pick up when we come back. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, today we're talking about building homes with hemp. Yeah, that hemp, the hemp from cannabis sativa. Is it possible? Well, I'm thinking we have the people here who might be able to convince it so. So do stay tuned. We will be right back after these messages.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio program, Michael Olson. Today we're talking about building homes with hemp. Is it possible? Well, we have some people here who can probably convince us one way or another. One is Catherine Mathewson. Catherine is the owner of Secret Gardens, a landscape design company who builds beautiful gardens around Northern California. And she's the one that grabbed me by the collar and said, look here, Michael Olson, we have to do something about the way we're doing things here in California because the state is burning up. We have to find a different way of doing things. And she pointed to cannabis and the hemp fiber that comes from cannabis. And she's been working with the folks at Sunstrand. Is it Sunstrand or Sunstrands? I forgot already.
It's Sunstrand, but the website is Sunstrands Forum.
Okay. Sunstrands. That's where you go to find out about Sunstrands, where they make hemp-based building materials of all kinds. And she was working with Adam Block, who's the Vice President of Marketing. And we have with us also today the head cheese himself of Sunstrand, who is Dr. Trey Riddle. And let's start with that whole notion of fireproof. Is it indeed possible to build a home out of hemp materials and make it fireproof? Dr. Riddle?
You know, I have several degrees in engineering, so I tend to be
pretty particular about standards and specifications.
I don't think
it is possible to build a hemp house that is fireproof. It is possible to build a hemp house that is fire resistant, I would say. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think we should be clear that it is an organic, a lignocellulosic material. It can burn. The key is that we try to make it such that it self-extinguishes, so that if a flame is removed, it does not continue to burn. That is really the objective in reducing the flammability potential or increasing the flammability resistance.
Now, is this a property of the hemp itself, or is it just something you engineer into the hemp?
Hemp is flammable by nature. It's not as flammable as many substances like petroleum by any means. But yes, it is flammable. We do actually treat the hemp fiber with a mineral slurry, which reduces the flammability of hemp.
Mm-hmm. So, out in the urban fringe here in California, where people build their houses in the woods or on the grasslands, is it possible to construct homes in a way that would reduce how vulnerable they are to fire? Can you get enough fire resistance in the materials to really make it worthwhile?
Well, I think so. I think, though, another piece of this is the overall design consideration. So I read an article about some of the problems with the construction in California. Is lots of the houses that are burning, are up to 50 years old, and so they're using old design, relatively old and old materials. So I tend to think of systems as being holistic, and we should endeavor to incorporate into our design material selection and design aspects that yield an optimal output. So it's not just about let's swap, one insulation for another. That's great in an existing home, but if we're going to build new homes, let's take a holistic approach to designing in the most optimal scenarios that take into account the materials performance and the design attributes.
Well, Catherine, as a design person, a landscape design person, does that make sense, building that into what a home and a yard look like?
Well, one of the things I wanted to say is that this is called the WUI, the interface between the wilderness. That has increased by 13 million new houses in the last, between 1990 and 2010. So they're not old, necessarily old homes that are being built.
There's just a lot of them, right?
Yeah, they're just increasing greatly. Oh. It's the biggest place where homes are increasing in our state, and in the country as well. I had this experience in the Oakland fire, which really put me on and got me into this direction. I had worked on a garden for many years, and I finished the one phase the week before the Oakland Hills fire, and the house burned down, I was told by my clients. So I went a couple weeks later and looked to see what happened to the garden, and no plant had been burned. In that garden and the gardens and the landscape around it, the trees were fine. And it made me realize and think about it and research that the buildings are creating the heat for these fires because they're not fireproof and built out of materials that just really increase the heat of the fire and then increase the fires. We have fires naturally, our ecosystems,
sure.
And our plants.
Catherine, was that fire what led you to the insulating your home with hemp fiber? Was that kind of the direct path there?
Yes. I'm thinking about it I'm just thinking. I'm not in that kind of a community. I'm in an urban, you know, a historical urban community in San Jose. So it's not, something I worry about. But I'm doing it simply because it's the right thing to do.
Well, in talking about the right thing to do, I guess the right thing to do is to always be looking for different ways of doing things, especially given the fact that what we have been doing is resulting in a lot of trouble right now. And so we look at all of the things that we can make out of cannabis, and the list is incredibly long. When I look at the website for Sunstrands, I see that they have all kinds of different products for all kinds of different things, even to the extent of sporting goods and whatnot. So I kind of like to look at that. Where do you start with the whole process? You take the hemp plant and grind it up, and away you go. Is that where you start, Dr. Riddle?
Well, to be clear, on our website we show a lot of applications, not necessarily all of those are products that we make. So we will service the sporting goods industry, but we don't have a sporting goods product per se. So I just want to make that clear. But it is important that our materials are compatible with those manufacturing processes. And in order to do that, we have to process the hemp stalk, or the hemp straw, as we call it, in a manner that yields a compatible material. And so it doesn't start with grinding. It starts with what is typically called decortication.
Okay.
And so the hemp stalk.
Wait a minute. Hold that thought. We have to take a quick break, but I want to hear about this process. We're talking cannabis. We're talking hemp, which comes from cannabis. We're talking the uses that can be made of that cannabis, and we're going to figure out if we can use those things to build our homes. So this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. Hey, do stay tuned. We're talking with Kentucky.
And now, more of What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, I guess it has to start with farmers, right? And you've got farmers out there in Kentucky who are growing cannabis sativa, which is cultivated so that it grows very high and tall, correct, Doctor?
That's right. Yeah, up to 15 feet tall.
15 feet tall, so tall and straight, and you have these long, wonderful fibers, and inside we have the herd, and right up at the top we have the seeds for food and oil and whatnot, so we can put all of those things to use. So it comes to you, I guess, how does it work? You just have to start by chopping it down, right?
That's right. So actually, the agronomy is a little bit different depending on your objective. So if you're growing for grain or CBD, is a little bit different than if you're optimizing for fiber. But basically, when you grow for fiber, it's very similar to planting for corn and harvesting for hay. So we literally receive straw bales. I mean, you would think they were hay bales if you saw them on a truck going down the road, except it's hemp straw or hemp stalk. And those bales, which may be the big round bales weighing up to 1,000 pounds apiece, or the really large square bales that will be 4 feet by 4 feet by 8 feet long, weighing over 1,000 pounds apiece, will come into our plants, and we begin to pull those bales apart. And after the bales have started to be pulled apart, we use a process that's usually called decortication. And decortication separates the outer fiber, the bast fiber, from the inner woody core, which is, you know, the herd. Mm-hmm. So that's the basic primary process, is to separate those two different constituents.
How many different products do you make with hemp now?
Well, I'm not even positive. We have the two, you know, you start with those two lines, the fiber and the herd. And then in the fiber side, we probably have at least half a dozen different variations of the fiber. And then on the herd side, we have at least half a dozen different variations of that. Now, those are still just raw materials. You know, it's still just a bale of fiber or a bag of woody particulate. The different properties of those materials allow them to go into different upstream manufacturing processes.
So do you supply those upstream manufacturers, or are you one yourself?
For the most part, the majority of our business is we supply two other manufacturers' raw materials, with the ex- couple of exceptions, one exception being the natural fiber, the hemp insulation. So we do actually manufacture that, you know, product, but most of what we do is we sell the just the raw fiber. Mm-hmm.
Are you one of the only ones to make the insulation? Because Catherine went looking in Chicago and couldn't find it and was told to go to Kentucky where she found you. So you must be one of the only ones left.
That's true. I mean, there is a product in Europe, and I think there may still be a product in Canada. It kind of came, started in spurts and ended, so I don't know if it's available in Canada now or not. But certainly in the USA, you know, we're the only company manufacturing and selling that product for sure.
What about other products like paper?
Right now, it's more of an artisan network, I would say. So we actually just shipped off, 1,500 pounds of hemp fiber for paper application just the other day, which is relatively small, as you might imagine, the grand scheme of paper. So right now, it's on the artisan scale, but it's growing.
Well, I was just wondering about, newsprint. I just saw the other day where newsprint was going through the roof because of the trade spat we're having with Canada. And so wondering, well, why don't we make it out of hemp instead of wood pulp?
Well, and I'm not a paper expert. Certainly all papers have their different needs and what cellulose fiber goes into them. But I believe you're right. I believe you could make newsprint out of hemp fiber. I think the challenge in paper is the costing. So most all paper is made from wood pulp, and wood pulp is amazingly inexpensive. They're basically getting wood chips at $50 a ton. Well, it's pretty hard to get, a farmer to grow for you at $50 a ton to grow hemp. So there's definitely, hemp, while it might be able to do 25,000 things, it's not always the cost-effective solution for all those things.
And your job, of course, as a business person, is to find where you can make the money with it. What is your best business model?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
What is your best business model right now? Your job is to figure out how to make money with a crop that's essentially brand new to the landscape. Where do you do your best business?
Well, nonwovens, industrial nonwovens, is where the majority of our fiber is going right now. And so that's actually a large set of material substrates. We certainly see the biggest demands are likely to come out of the automotive industry for door panel type construction like we talked about before. Right now, most of what we do is in thermal insulation, be that for buildings, but then also for food delivery services, so like your Blue Aprons and things like that.
So for the food trays, you mean?
When you get the fresh food delivered, like Blue Apron delivers a meal to you in a box, and they have to insulate that box.
Ah.
And so they'll actually insulate the thermal insulation, in some cases, is hemp fiber.
There you go. So we're just looking at a whole bunch of new possibilities for this crop that's been around forever and ever and ever. The question is, how do we figure out how to make it all work? And there's an issue. When we come back...
Here.
Yeah, hold on, Catherine. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'll pick you right up, okay?
Okay.
This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour, with Catherine Mathewson, owner of Secret Gardens Landscape Design, Adam Block, and we have the CEO, Dr. Trey Riddle, with us, who is from Sunstrands, and you do stay tuned.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we have a few more minutes. We're going to go right back to Catherine Mathewson, so we make sure we don't miss a thing. Catherine, go ahead.
In regards to what I would just want Sunstrands to know this, that I'm getting West Coast Insulation to install their Sunstrands insulation. And I spoke with the owner, Pete Handy, and he as he is looking at it and feeling it, he is very excited. He does not like any of the insulation he installs. And this is probably going to be a new product that he is going to be very excited about using.
There you go, a sale. But there it is. You have an entirely different experience with insulation and probably so many other things. Adam, you know, when you think about how you're going to go about selling this concept of hemp, maybe houses in the future, where do you start marketing at? How do you start getting people to open their eyes to hemp?
Well, the low-hanging fruit would be folks that are already leveraging natural materials, right? So we have not only high-performing set of materials and sustainable materials, but they're also very cost-effective. That's something we talked about earlier. In order to be adopted by industry, you have to be competitive. And that's one of the things that we're very excited to offer. On top of that, we go after applications that Dr. Riddle mentioned a few minutes ago, where we know we have expertise. So whether that's in nonwovens or absorbents or textiles, or believe it or not, even animal bedding. These are industries that we know, we understand, and we compete heavily.
So you can fire away. Well, thinking back to Henry Ford and the vision that he was trying to express in building that Model T out of hemp, a Model T that could run on hemp fuel, a Model T that had plastic panels said to be 10 times stronger than steel. And what happened to that vision? It just got outlawed, I guess. But people are starting to open their eyes now to the new possibility. So I have to ask Dr. Trey Riddle, do you think it's going to be possible for us to build good homes out of hemp in the near future?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a couple of different aspects there, and it's really great to be on the phone with a user of our installation. I'm so excited to hear from you and
customer.
Your feedback. That is great. Yeah, and what's interesting about those products is that it's a drop into existing commercial construction. So her contractor doesn't have to learn how to install the hemp fiber. It's just going to go in just like the glass fiber. That makes it readily adoptable. There are other technologies, though, that will actually change the way that you build the building. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity in both camps. And what we're seeing is the ability today, Sunstrand can make products that can be leveraged today, but we want to support new and innovative construction technologies that we hope can be adopted in the future for even better performance, in construction application.
And there you go, folks. We're going to be living in houses of hemp sometime soon. I want to thank Catherine Mathewson, who is the owner of Secret Gardens Landscape Design, San Jose, and Adam Block and Dr. Trey Riddle from Sunstrands in Kentucky. Also want to thank you and ask you all to remember Michael Olson's first law of the food chain. Agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Catherine, Adam, Dr. Trey, thank you all for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.